When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist?
Hello, so much has changed. Yes, the podcast coming at you in this most strangest of times, with no football to talk about, but hopefully a voice in the darkness for those self-isolating, and the veneer of normality for those who still, out of habit, check their podcast app for us and maybe other FPL pods at the start of the week. I'm joined by Stag and Nick, of course. Nick, how you doing?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I can't believe it's only 6 days ago we had Ben Crellin on the pod talking about the machinations of the double game weeks and the blank game weeks and coming up with all of our plans. And of course, now that it's all out the window, basically. And what our plans are, we don't know. But we're here to talk to you listeners. Of course, who we are, who got the assist. You can find us on Twitter at WGTA_FPL, at WGTA_Nick, or Stag at FPL Stag. On Instagram as well, WGTA.FPL. And you can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Spotify, wherever you like to get your pods. So, Stag, how are you? Are you all right? And what's on the agenda?
Evening, lads. All good for me anyway so far here in Brussels, Belgium. But obviously, this is a truly bizarre time to be podding. But it is great to be able to chat at the moment anyway. But look, regardless, we're going to move on with discussing, first of all, our reactions to having no football to watch. And I guess connected to that, what's going to be going on with FPL. We look at our lockdown plans just to, you know, everyone has them now. And we have loads of questions as well from everybody. So thanks so much for those.
Yeah, thanks everybody. Amazing to still see the community so active, I think, across social media, despite the fact that obviously there was no FPL to talk about. I guess normally the first thing we do is start with a game review. But here instead, I think it's worth just prefacing that, of course, we're super worried about what's happening. We hope that everything's okay with you guys. And we hope doing a pod is taking the positive spirit in which it's meant. We just want to basically, I guess, keep you guys company. Hopefully, as I said at the top, be a bit of relief from the isolation some of you may be going through, or some of the tough times you guys may be going through. So hopefully this kind of lightens the load a little bit and helps you through what's a hard time. And going forward, we'll see if we can keep going with the pods, even though we've got obviously no FPL to talk about. And I suppose that is the first thing to speak about on this one, because there's no football this weekend, was there, guys? It was a really, really boring weekend. I mean, I asked a few friends who don't like football, including my other half, what the hell do you do during the weekends? And I got told I do the housework and I do the chores around here. So I had to do the chores around here. But I mean, how have you guys gotten through this weekend? It's been very surreal, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely been a strange weekend. No football, but also, you know, a lot of people perhaps had planned events or planned activities and are not going out of the house either. So we're all kind of stuck indoors, basically. I mean, I was, you know, doing my childcare responsibilities over the course of the day. But typically on a weekend, I would be looking at my mobile phone or maybe have a couple of matches on, just following the football results, just sort of light relief in the background. And yeah, it felt very very strange weekend not having that to do. And you know, as I imagine most of your listeners would have felt the same way as well. I mean, personally, I know a few people have been playing Football Manager. There's a lot of Twitter chat about Football Manager and other games out there that you can play in the background. I bought Breath of the Wild on the Nintendo Switch, actually, and that's going to probably keep me pretty busy over the next few months, at least. I'm also working from home as well now, so I started working from home as of Wednesday this week, and I can see the situation being that I'm going to be working from home imagine for at least, you know, the next 8 to 10 weeks. Who knows how long, to be honest. We don't know. As we talked about, we don't know when the football's going to be back. So I'm pretty much full-time at home with no football. You've got to find some form of entertainment, be it film, music, video games. You know, there are plenty of other ways for sort of our generation to entertain ourselves, luckily.
So for me, this was actually meant to be a pretty bumper weekend, but with no football really involved, except for just nervously checking my phone to get in more inevitable FPL disappointment. I was actually supposed to be in Paris this weekend to watch the Ireland versus France rugby game in the Stade de France. So all of that kind of came apart over the last fortnight or so, unfortunately. But it was at least I was able to get myself prepped for, I guess, working from home and all of the things that need to go with that, like food, etc. So no, it has proved to be a lovely weekend here weather-wise. I enjoyed walking, a lot of walking, just to pass the time. And I've been kind of putting together lists of things that I want to do, be those, there are a few courses I want to do online just to improve my French on Duolingo and things like that. I was actually thinking about starting to try yoga. So this seems like a pretty good opportunity to follow a YouTuber or something for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, you name it. We don't know how long it's going to be. And so I've been kind of putting together lists of films and stuff as well that I wanted to watch. I've always felt I was a bit behind on how many films I'd have watched because I probably spent most of my time watching matches. So I did that. And I was, in fairness, also having a look out for any live sport that there was to be watched. So I found myself watching a little bit of snooker. I was planning to watch a bit of like the Brazilian League, which was still going at the time and looks like it's now going to be suspended. But I didn't actually watch it in the end. I found enough things to do to keep me going. So for now, surviving without football.
Yeah, I saw the players of Gremio went out wearing masks, didn't they, this weekend? Yeah. Crazy that was going ahead. Yet again, if you look at the horse racing, everybody's there. It doesn't matter. It's very strange, the uneven sort of response to it. But I know what you mean. Like, I'm similar to Nick. I'm working from home as well for the foreseeable. My cancer nurse says I'm a bit of a risk, so I should probably stay behind. But I don't mind working from home, but I kind of like the idea I can go out and go to work if I want to. So it's going to be a bit strange just doing it without any end in sight. Like, I'm looking forward to, strangely looking forward to going back to the office again already. But I mean, it's just the start now. Like, I mean, kind of 2 or 3 weeks time, who knows where we're going to be. I'm hoping that I'll be able to distract myself, I guess, during the time. And similar to Nick, I'm really into gaming, as you will probably know. So I think probably with my next paycheck, I'll be buying a Switch and joining Nick on Breath of the Wild or something like that. Having downloaded pretty much every PlayStation game going, tried it out and decided, oh, either I don't like it or smash my way through it. Yeah, I think it's unprecedented, isn't it? Like, I can't think of a time in my adult life when, for whatever reason, football's been suspended. I mean, one or two games being off due to bad weather, fair, whatever. But I just can't think of anything like this ever happening in the UK, the most temperate of countries, right? It's not like bushfires in Australia or something.
Yeah, I certainly don't remember anything about it like it in Ireland in my lifetime. And I think it's not just the football being paused, it's the idea that kind of life itself is on pause. And I guess sitting here in Belgium right now, it's a bit more locked down than it is in the UK. And there are other countries that are even further locked down still, like Spain and Italy, for example. And so it's kind of frightening to start to try and think through all that through, but I'm genuinely just trying to stay as optimistic and maybe as constructive as I can with like seeing this through, but also following whatever advice there is being published and trying to stay abreast of developments, I guess, in the whole entire anti-COVID battle that humanity is facing at the moment. But from an FPL point of view, I think this is something that we need to keep tabs on. Like, we don't know when football is going to return, and like, this is complete idle speculation, of course, as it stands right now. It looks like there's a UEFA meeting to take place on Tuesday, which will determine the fate of the European Championships, which were to take place this summer. There have been plenty of reports about it being moved to the autumn, perhaps even around winter when the AFCON will be on usually, or just straight off to the summer of 2021, which kind of seems like the easiest band-aid solution to just pick it up and just move it to the next June instead. And of course, all of these are going to have huge ramifications for FPL in terms of like, how do they put all these games together? Do we just end up having loads of double game weeks? Do they split it all up? Do we use a free hit in 38 for like a quintuple game week? It's kind of, it's mental to kind of comprehend and think about what could happen in the game.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, officially, they're going to re-review it on the 4th of April with these two game weeks suspended for now. But, you know, judging by what's going on in the real world, it's very unlikely that the football's going to be reconvened in 2 weeks, even if they try and come up with some sort of closed doors scenario. But we won't know anything more for a couple of weeks. I guess we kind of have transfers lurking around. I've now got 2 free transfers. I'm probably going to use one just for the sake of using one, just to kind of tidy my team up in the meantime. I'm not just gonna let it burn like some managers might be thinking about doing. But yeah, it's definitely an odd one with our FPL teams all scoring 0 points. I think you actually did you get minus four this week, Tom, didn't you? Because you take
yeah, I did. Yeah, took a red arrow for you guys to get a green, you know.
That's yeah, so that's like green. It's like green.
The guy I am.
But yeah, it's definitely up in the air with our FPL teams, and obviously not. Kind of our main thoughts or concerns are with what's actually going on in the wider world. And yeah, it's not just FPL and football affected, it's all sports, it's humanity in general. And yeah, it's worrying times.
It is, but we are an FPL podcast, so I suppose we've got to speak about the ramifications a little bit more for FPL, and please indulge us a sec. So as been mentioned, game weeks 30 and 31 still stand in the FPL code frame, as you probably know. It's just that obviously you're not going to score any points. So I took minus four this week. I got a red arrow, whereas everybody didn't take any didn't take a hit or something. I probably have got a green, and the same is going to be the case next week. After that, as Stag said, they're going to have to try to find a way to stick all these games in. If there is a solution that means that they play behind closed doors from kind of mid-April onwards, then maybe we'll see, I don't know, some sort of reallocation of the chips or something. This is idle speculation, by the way. This isn't an ITK thing. I mean, there's a few people in this week who have said, you know, the Brighton chief exec said that he found it hard to imagine the season continuing in April. And Karen Brady, of course, has famously, now infamously, I suppose, come out and said that they should void the season. I wonder why. But according to some journos, in terms of the Thursday meeting, apparently people are sort of optimistic that the season can be kicked off again, which would be a surprise. Perhaps might be a pleasant surprise, to be honest, because I mean, sport is all of our release. It's all of our sort of outlet. It's all the thing that we look forward to, I suppose, like living for the weekend in some ways. So it might be nice if football is back, but equally, you obviously want everybody to be safe, as Nick was saying. How FPL deal with it? I just don't know whether it is they reallocate our chips again, whether it is that they kind of change things up. I mean, they were quite open that it was an unprecedented situation on Twitter, and I think that's probably to be borne in mind, and hopefully they'll come up with a solution. Ben Quellen said on Twitter this was like the easiest solution, just to let 30 and 31 be, and then kind of we come back to it in 32. So it might just be that we end up with really good fun sort of end of season, albeit behind closed doors, where the game itself gives us lots of double game weeks and lots of high scoring weeks to distract ourselves, I guess, from what's going on. Best case scenario. Worst case scenario, of course, it is. It will sort of suspend until next year. But there's nothing really we can do about that. It's all external forces. It's all force majeure. It's all things that we can't really affect. What we can affect is how we're feeling and the way in which we approach this sort of time. So hopefully us being with you a little bit has given you a little bit of companionship and hopefully lift your spirit a little bit.
Yeah, my personal hope for FPL for the final few game weeks is when this actually does work itself out. Now, the precedent would suggest that they might give us another wild card. That has happened before. It was game week one, oh goodness, maybe about 10 years ago, that the systems weren't working particularly well and people couldn't make last minute transfers in the final week. And so they ended up giving everyone a wild card, an extra wild card basically for game week two, I think it was. And it worked itself out from there. I think in this scenario, given the length of the break, given the ramifications in terms of form, ability, not training, cohesiveness, everything that's going to come from this, I think the most logical solution would be to probably crown an FPL champion as the season is right now. Unfortunately, given how the chips are, that's really difficult and unfair on people who haven't used all their chip, and I think that's all of us included. But at least what we might have then is like this kind of just run at it, let's say mayhem 7 game weeks, where it's just like the whole game compressed into a small period and just make the best of it. I think that seems to be the funnest way, and I think the most engaging way for FPL managers. I think from an FPL point of view, like this could easily be like August all over again when this comes back they'll have to allow us to make changes to our teams. Like, it's going to be a completely different situation by the time we get to it. And so I hope that's what they do. But the season will be played on, as far as I'm concerned, of course, speculation here, etc. But just the broadcasting revenues and the survival of the clubs and the importance of continuing the league from the point of view of who gets promoted and who gets relegated. Like, you have to remember, the championship playoff is the most, like, there's no game generates more revenue for a club in world football because of the ramifications in terms of getting TV revenue, going up, exposure, commercial revenue, etc. that comes with it. They can't leave Leeds and West Brom there at the top of the league. They cannot keep three teams that are in the Premier League right now that shouldn't be next season. And so from that point of view, they will have to find a way, I think, to play the season through eventually.
Yeah, I mean, we're only speculating, but obviously the whole of Europe's impacted by this. And you've also got the Qatar World Cup, which was always going to be in the winter as well. So there are a few machinations that could potentially be played out where you have almost like the football season running on until like October, November, and then you end up with a different calendar to what we had previously. And, you know, the Euros could be in the winter, for instance, as well. So there's definitely a few things that could be considered. But ultimately, I don't think we're going to see a decision anytime soon because we don't know how long this epidemic's going to last for. It could be, as we said, it could be over in a couple of months. It could be much longer than that. So who knows, really?
Yeah, so one to keep on the constant review. I liked what Wayne Rooney said earlier on today, actually, that it might be a good idea if, for example, they play the season until September, then the off-season is kind of September till October, then November the season starts again, and that kind of gets us into the rhythm for the Qatar World Cup, which Nick just mentioned, obviously, is over over the winter period. It's just so bizarre, isn't it? It's so weird to think that just, as Nick said, this top 6 days ago, we were thinking about how we're going to navigate game week 31, how we're going to deal with the blanks, how the doubles were going to shoot us up the rankings. And now we're talking about when the football's going to commence again and when we're even going to be able to go back to normal life. Very, very strange to kind of see the never world we've ended up in it. Right, okay. Well, enough of that, I suppose. Let's move on to the questions this week.
Who got the assist?
There's a gamut of questions this week. There are so many. Thank you very much for all of those. It's about the summer, about football, some aren't. And I think what we're going to do is actually just reel through them rather than doing my usual thematizing and collecting them into something more digestible. So I guess let's go from top to bottom and see what we get. Yeah, kind of random, isn't it, this week? The first one is Barry at Kermit, who asked, what would be your highest and lowest attribute rating if you, Nick and Stag, were players and football manager?
First things first, I'm absolutely terrible at football. So my highest attribute rating probably would be one of the mental ones as opposed to the physical ones, just because I'm not an athlete at all. So I suppose if it's a mental one, it'd probably be something really lame like concentrational work rate or something like that. Probably work a lot of effort into my daily
Scott Park
composure.
It won't be your best technical one.
I lack the pace that I had perhaps when I was about 18. Not very fit these days either.
Maybe long throws, Nick?
Maybe long. Yeah, I could do a long throw perhaps.
Like a tight marking, maybe?
Tight marking, yeah. Maybe that one would be quite good.
Tackling.
I was all right at tackling, actually. So that was probably one of my better skills.
Yeah, yeah. Your relative Chopper Harris.
I used to be all right at tackling. Generally, I was played as a defender when I played football when I was sort of 14, 15. So maybe tackling. Yeah, the worst one would be a physical, probably just technique or something. It's my technique, right? So I don't know. I think that's enough about me. Should we move on to one of you guys?
Yeah, I'll jump in. I think my best one would probably come in the like physical. I'm pacey enough, so it'd probably be one of those by dint of the fact that like technically I wouldn't be very good, and mentally I always think that maybe some people who've played with me would argue my aggression can get a little bit too high at times. But yeah, I would consider myself an extremely competitive person. My worst ones, it's definitely going to be one of the technicals. Geez, maybe just basic technique is like a bit of an issue, but like, and then maybe I guess the people who play with me might sometimes say that my vision wasn't good enough in the mental side of things, but I would just say that it's probably more like composure, you know, just that tunnel vision that just gets you, you know, but it's all about just looking up and taking a breath, and sometimes I definitely don't do that.
I see the Daniel James of the podcast.
Yes, that's actually probably really a bro. Like,
joining the Steady Eddie Jack Cork in Nick. I'm not really too sure. I think vision would probably be my main strength. Probably the epitome of he has the vision but not the ability. Can spot the pass, but was not able to do it. Some sort of pound shot number 10. I don't know.
I remember playing a game when I was about 10 years old, and a coach just like shouting out, like a coach was shouting out one of the players marking me, and he was like, "Watch that fellow with number 10 in his back. He has the runs," and the whole entire pitch started laughing. It's obviously to do with running and not diarrhea.
I'm not doing a Gary Lineker right there. I guess natural fitness would be quite low for me, worryingly, in these times. But yeah, no, natural fitness would have been very good. I was just never really enjoyed working out or doing any exercise. I was quite lazy. So maybe that one probably be where my biggest issue lay. Yeah, I think that's probably makes sense. All right, next one. Best and worst TV series finales and why? FPL Awesome. So from the Football Manager to the heights and depths of TV.
So I think for me, probably the best TV series finale probably actually is Breaking Bad. I just thought that was really, really good, the way they closed off that TV series in its fifth season, just wrapped up all the storylines, mainly around Walt's family and Walt, and just the way they managed that. I just thought that was a really, really good TV ending. I know that there was some plot holes, I guess there was a gap with Jesse's story, which was wrapped up recently with the film El Camino, which I actually thought was pretty good. And not everyone liked it, but I thought that was a really good film as well. But yeah, I thought Breaking Bad was a really, really good season ending. And to be honest, like most shows that I've watched had terrible TV series finales. Actually, just like they always make a complete hash of the TV series finale. It's something really hard to do, but you know, Game of Thrones pretty bad. But I also thought Dexter had a terrible ending, so I'd probably pick Dexter as like the worst TV series finale. Just that ending was just, I won't spoil it, but it was just rubbish. Like if you've ever watched Dexter, I quite liked it as a show. It kind of died a bit of a death at the end, but yeah, bad ending.
All right, no, interesting choices there. I heard a Game of Friends is pretty bad. I didn't actually watch it myself, but yeah, no, I heard it was pretty terrible. My best is Deep Space Nine, Star Trek. I know Nick, you're watching it at the moment, but that's possibly the best ending of a show I've ever seen. It's incredibly long. It's about half a season's worth of a story arc towards the very end, but ends in an incredibly satisfying and very, very cool way. And What We Left Behind, the DS9 documentary as well, is definitely worth watching if you're interested in that. And the worst is How I Met Your Mother. I watched that all the time when I was at uni. I think we were at uni at the prime time for that. All that build up and the horrible cop out ending.
I don't think anyone's still watching it.
Tom. Yeah, the mother died and he wanted Robin all along. Like, oh, such a rubbish. Like, I didn't buy it at all. It was so forced. The characters had moved on. And then when Ted told Robin he loved it in the series 6, it was like, the hell, that's just so imposed. It was so forced, like trying to make the ending happen. As you can tell, I'm still annoyed about it to this day. But there is a great ending out there, which is the alternative one, which you can watch on YouTube, which I prefer to watch if I ever do get through How I Met Mother again. It's just, yeah, it ties it up very, very nicely rather than all the rubbish they sort of put into it at the end to kind of force the ending that they kind of wanted. I think the characters have just gone way past where they thought it was going to go in the beginning. What about you, Stag?
So I preface this by saying I'm not exactly the most prolific series watcher. And so unfortunately, I'm kind of repeating ones that have already been mentioned, but they were definitely on in mind the minute I saw Chris's question. So the best finish for me definitely was Breaking Bad. And I think part of the reason why was, as Nick alluded to, the fact that they tied together the stories. But another aspect of it for me was the fact that it actually had a very disappointing lull as far as I was concerned. I kind of started to get a little bit tired of the way the story was developing, and maybe it felt at times they were just trying to make episodes for the sake of it. The one where Walt is cleaning that bloody room and he's chasing the fly is perhaps the epitome of that. But they managed to save the whole entire thing, as far as I was concerned, with what was an absolutely brilliant ending. On the other side, it's Game of Thrones. Like, I watched it over the years as it came out. I think I watched it from as it was coming out, from season 2 or season 3, and just the disappointment that, like, all that time investment and so much promise with so many well-developed characters up until that point, the way they just tore it to shreds effectively just to like ram it together. If they doubled the size of that series, could have been so much, or that season in particular, it could have been so much better at the end. And what was frustrating as well was the fact that clearly they had the budget and they put together these absolutely beautiful episodes and the battle scenes were absolutely fantastic, and the CGI was believable, and the music in particular was extremely good. And yet the actual point of the series, which was the storyline, was ruined as far as I was concerned. So yeah, Game of Thrones would be there. The next question we have, actually, Tom, is very much for you. And General Zod wanted to know, like, tell us about Australia. What did you get up to? You know, and then also Zod is asking about how many shops has Nick visited in his search for nappies?
So feels like a long time ago now, but yeah, Australia was great. A beautiful country. I went from the very far north in Cairns all the way down to the south of Victoria, and traveled by Greyhound. Was there for 2 months, so saw lots and lots of amazing and wonderful things and places. But I hate being that guy who goes, oh yeah, when I was off traveling, this is what I did. Yeah, oh, that person is always insufferable, so I'm not going to talk about it too much. But yeah, no, it was fantastic. I can see why people go out there to live, and I can also see why people leave to come here, just because it's so big and you travel for so long and you're still in Australia. Whereas, you know, if you go from here somewhere else, then at least you're you know, in a different country. Well, in theory anyway. Nick, how many shops did you visit for nappies today?
So, well, Tesco's didn't have any, but Lidl thankfully did. And yeah, it's just outrageous, to be honest, the amount of people that are panic buying and just buying so many unnecessary items as well. It meant that, like, no shops have Cowpole, for instance, and this really affects people that have, like, young children. And one of the people, actually, when I posted a picture of the no meat and no bread and no nappies in Tesco, one of the people that commented said that their elderly mother had basically visited 7 shops trying to secure groceries or secure the right milk or whatever they needed, which I just think is absolutely shocking, to be honest. Like, so yeah, a lot of people out there panic buying, and quite selfishly as well, which I thought I'd just call out briefly.
Yeah, it's a reprehensible behaviour, I think. Yeah, next question then. Late Riser 12 brings us back to FPL for a short moment. Best moments of the season so far for all of us. What do you guys reckon? What comes to mind, Stag?
Best moment for me is pretty obvious, and I think you'll all know what it was straight away. Anyone who's listening will know it. And it was the day I brought in Sergio Aguero on my wildcard, captained him, and he got that hat-trick plus an assist. That was, at the time, it felt like the moment the season was going to turn around for me, and perhaps the fact that it
redemption, yeah,
turn out. Yeah, and then, you know, that redemption was extremely short-lived. I think there were 3 or 4 good game weeks in it, and then it all started to kind of go sour again, like the rest of the season. And why have I struggled, for example, to maybe answer that question in a personal case? I just feel like I keep getting the 50-50s wrong. Like, even in the game week we've just gone, it was, you heard me live reacting, or at least muting my microphone and reacting on camera in front of the guys, to Harvey Barnes smashing it for Leicester, whilst of course I picked up Ayoti Perez, and that kind of actually summed up my season in a nutshell. But just no matter what I did, you know, pick X, Y goes well, and look, that just happens sometimes. Like, that's sometimes the difference.
Yeah, I guess for me it was quite apt that Harvey Barnes 19 pointer. That was my highest individual point score over the entire course of the season in that last game that was on TV, and last game that was played to get that return. I probably would say that probably was my best moment of the season. Fantastic to see, you know, those points hit my FPL team, and something happened that wasn't kind of stayed and, you know, boring. So yeah, that was a really big moment, and one I'll remember for a long time, especially considering the consequences that have occurred since.
Interesting. Wow, the most recent thing, a peak Emerald win, full effect for you there, Nick. For me, I think it's probably a bit of a painful memory for other people. It's triple captaining Salah in double game week, because I woke up, I was in Australia at the time, I woke up and seen that he'd scored and got an assist as well. And that was really, really good. Obviously, I did see the day before that Mane had gone off very, very early, so I could, you know, it could so easily have been the other side of the coin. But that's when I started thinking and speaking to Stag's point. But the 50-50s were finally going my way, and things are finally going to start working out. Wildcard in the next week, and I got my first ever full house at the back, so everybody got a clean sheet. And I thought, yeah, this is definitely my time, definite time to go up. Was a 220k or something then, highest I've been all season. God, that's depressing. But it was the highest I've been all season. I was thinking, yeah, you know, I can really push on from here. And then from there, mediocrity kicked in again. But yeah, I think that triple captain for Salah going my way was probably the biggest, the best moment of the season, just because it's the highest triple captain I've ever had. I think it was Aguero last year. He went off after a goal and assist. I think he went off after about 45 minutes the year before that. I think it was Aguero again, actually, against Stoke, and he didn't do anything. And the year before that, Payet got two late assists for West Ham. So yeah, not the best. So yeah, my highest scoring triple captain ever. Right, next question. Adam Pritchard, friend of the pod, says, "You're forced into isolation with one Premier League footballer and one manager. Who do you choose?" Oh, so topical. All right, Stag, what do you reckon?
Okay, well, for me, this is really obvious when I think about the manager that I choose to be stuck in isolation with. I think it'd have to be Graham Potter. I feel like, number one, from just a survival point of view, I feel like old Potter will have a system in place pretty quickly to maximize our way of like yielding the best out of supply chains however they go over the next while. I think that Potter is definitely going to be one for like concocting herbal remedies and stuff as well, and he's probably a good chef. You know, he's a man who's into like all sorts of like, you know, he's not just a football man, he's a much more interesting man. He speaks lots of languages. He seems like the sort of guy who might have a few interesting life stories that aren't about going two-footed into people in the 80s when football was real. So I think that's why Graham Potter would be the obvious choice. As a player, I think I'm going to have to pass to Nick and come back to me on that one.
Yeah, maybe Potter can magic some spell to get you off the island as well. I think for me, the manager would have to be Pochettino. I'd probably just like to speak to him about his time at Tottenham and what he thinks went wrong, and just kind of discuss. And I think he's actually a really nice guy as well, unlike a current manager who's got a bit of a dark side, and I really have a distaste for. I really like Poch as manager. I was really sad to see him go, and I'd love to talk to him a little bit about Spurs. In terms of the players, I'm just kind of thinking off my feet, it could be player like Son. I think Son's a really nice guy. I don't really have an answer. Or maybe someone like Alisson with his warm hands. I don't know.
For all your baptism needs as well, Nick.
Yeah, exactly.
everyone have a bath, who's your man, isn't he? All right, I think for me it would be Daishi, the manager. I think he'd keep you upbeat, wouldn't he? And plus it would be amusing, like, hearing him give everything a nickname. He'd have a nickname for everything, like Betty. Cook some foodie, either that
Woody.
But I think he'd be very good at keeping your spirits up, you know, when you're in isolation mode. You know, he's a very learned man as well, from reading interviews of him in The Athletic. I think he'd have a lot to talk about and be a very interesting character. He also goes in and mentors all of the emerging football coaches as well, so I'm sure I could learn a lot from Big Daishi. Player, I don't know, maybe Virgil van Dijk. He'd be very tidy, at least lots of clean sheets. Anthony, what do you reckon?
I'm just thinking, actually, I think I'd love to get like one of the Irish lads, just purely because I think I just relate to them if I'm stuck in isolation with somebody for a while. I think someone who just like grate on me after a while, if it's someone who just doesn't quite get Irish humour. So I don't know, one of the young lads maybe who might be half solid at FIFA, I think like Adam Ida or Connolly or something like that would be perfect. That'd be grand.
Obafemi, get him in.
Michael Obafemi would actually be a really interesting one to have as well. Like, I don't know, that whole entire Irish under 21s crop, or even like Shane Long or something, that'd be fine.
Right, next question. FPL Wilf says, patrons and it's a controversial one. Patrons and charge for content fantasy providers. Is it time to pause charging or continue to make cash during the troubled times? So a bit of a question about Patreon. Obviously, we don't do one, then we're not going to be doing one anytime soon. But I think probably it's probably the right thing to pause at the moment, just because there's no FPL. So therefore, what are you charging for? It's up to everybody what you pay for. I'm not going to ever dictate to you what's a good thing or a bad thing to spend your money on. So I've got no problem with people doing Patreons. But in this current climate, I can probably see the point that he's trying to drive at, which is that it's not really worth trying to make money out of people for not really producing anything relevant, because there's no FPL right now. You're not creating the product that people are paying for. So yeah, I think it's probably a good thing to spend them. Josh and Brandon have, for example, from Was Cheating. What do you guys reckon?
Look, for me, I guess it just seems like no more than what you've said, Tom. It's, I can only echo your point that, like, when there's no FPL, I think people should just, you know, sack it off for a while and just come back to it when the football returns. Like, I don't think there are many people who are, let's say, relying on their Patreons to put bread on the table, and I think that people should be kind of compassionate in these times and kind of remember what exactly people are paying for as well. For those content providers, it might be a good chance for them to maybe broaden their reach again. I think that there's a necessary kind of amount of, you know, you kind of close off yourself from new listeners when you go behind a paywall to an extent. And I think it's a good opportunity for those people maybe to, you know, be known for who they are, or maybe just as a free pod, or else to just, you know, sack it off completely for a while and get a break for themselves.
Yeah, makes sense. I would agree with both of you there. Sorry, guys, I've got to go check on the child because he's crying his eyes out.
Do you just go, man? We'll just say...
Yeah, go for it, Nick.
All right, yeah, just say, unfortunately, Nick's had to go deal with some crying child.
Crying child, yeah. All right, no, you go ahead, man. At this point, unfortunately, dad issues overtook for Nick. But Stag and I were just going to go ahead and finish up the pod as it is.
Does that sound like Ian has the issue?
Oh, yeah. Okay. At this point, childcare issues unfortunately took over the pod for Nick, so it's just going to be Stag and I from now on. Just to continue on then, the next question is from Deathstar FPL, who asks for a couple of things. The first thing is to rank the Star Trek captains from worst to best. I'm guessing I'm best placed to answer that one, Anthony.
I have literally don't know if I can name one, Tom. I've never sat through an episode of Star Trek.
Why did I hire you? But anyway, if you want the list from worst to best, this is Archer, Kirk, Janeway, and then controversially Picard and Sisko. I'm not going to argue about that. I love DS9 more than I love TNG, but I'm enjoying Picard a lot. The second one, what's the biggest disagreement Tom and Nick and Stag, I guess, have ever had? Stag's biggest disagreement with you, probably just that you've been forgotten by previous list of questions. I don't think we've quite got there yet. Nick and I, what have we disagreed on? Well, we've known each other for so long, I don't really disagree that much, because I just know what he's like, so I can kind of tell when he's just not in the mood to be talking, and I can tell whether he doesn't really mean it if he's being a bit acerbic. I'm sure he can tell as well if I'm being a bit catty. So I think we haven't really disagreed that much. We've had a few conversations about monetizing that we haven't really quite seen eye to eye on, but at the end of the day, I think that's just part and parcel of working with somebody on something like this, which isn't really a business as such, but it's still sort of a brand. I don't know. That's the only thing that really springs to mind. But yeah, we haven't really disagreed for many, many years now. And the final thing is, can Tom please recreate with accents his favourite interaction with a local in Australia? I don't really...
This is where Tom has prepared a script for me to read the other side.
I don't think I interacted too much with locals in Australia, for God's sake. I think apart from the locals that really stand out are the ones that were really racist to the other Chinese people in the group, and then looked at me and then just did that thing, you know, when you were like a naughty child who's just been caught out doing something naughty. Two separate tour guides did that. They were making a comment that the other Chinese people in the group not being able to understand them, and looked at me and then kind of looked simultaneously a little bit sort of bashful and sheepish. This was like out in the countryside, so there you go. I guess one of the weird things one of the cultural differences is that you have to stand up and pay at the till in Australia. So I remember when I first got there, when we finished eating, I was like, oh, hey, can we get the bill, please? And the waiter was like, you're all right, mate. I was like, sorry, can I get the bill, please? And it's like, you're all right, mate. Just come up the front, eh? And I thought that he was like getting me out to fight him or something. And I was just like, the food wasn't that bad. And so he looked really angry. And I walked up to the till and the waiter was like, hey, how's it going? How's your meal? And I was just like, oh, okay, why didn't you bring me your bill? And he was just like, oh, we don't do things that way in Australia, mate. So there you go. Maybe that answers, aren't they? Right. Next question then. The FPL guy has written in and asked, if Tissue was an FPL player, how much would they cost? And would you class them as essential for the run-in?
I think Tissue's a pretty deadly pick for the doubles and the blanks that are coming up in the next few weeks? You know, kind of covers all the bases, has definitely got potential in terms of, you know, it's a, you know, from a defensive point of view, helps you keep clean sheets, very, very important. It can assist you for sure as well. And, like, you know, can help along the goals front too. So I think it kind of reminds me a bit of maybe a Branislav Ivanovic type, you know, pretty good pick when he was at Chelsea, maybe a 7.0 type defender. So pretty serious stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Tush would be very, very useful if, like you, when you were a child, you've got the runs on the football field. unfortunately, given the current supermarket status, there's a bit of a differential as well to have Tush. It would certainly have a cost on the black market. I can imagine it would go for Mo Salah sort of style, 12.5 million. And I think it would be very, very essential as the supplies dwindle and scarcity looms. Hopefully not. Hopefully there'll be plentiful tissue for everybody. Next question. We've gone a bit esoteric now, but hey, never mind. FPL start to charge fighter. So next question is Suj from Planet FPL. He asks, FPL start to charge £5 a year to have a team. You can have as many teams as you want. It eliminates the bots, blah, blah, blah. So at £5 a team, how much would you have?
I know for me, it would still be one. I find it almost impossible to manage a second team. I think I briefly try to have teams that have a certain kind of like thing going on, a bit like, you know, the over 30s that you would have here, but I just can't do it. I might do a zombie league team at a push, but oh God, I just don't really like the idea of managing more. And I just kind of feel like it kind of ruins the purity of FPL that for me anyway, it's kind of important that, you know, you make your decision and you stick by it, and usually you die by it in my case, as opposed to live by it. And that's kind of important. Like, I think if you just have a rake of teams, it kind of defeats the purpose for me.
Yeah, I agree. Well, it doesn't stop many, many people from doing so anyway. Now it's free. For me, I think I would have one. I might push have two, maybe for a zombie thing, or maybe just to kind of as an interest to kind of hedge myself a little bit. The thing is that I currently do that with Sky anyway. And in Sky, I was in the top 1,000 not very long ago, as opposed to my FPL not being very good. So I don't know. I think maybe it would just be one. I think I agree with you, Stag, but if you make your decisions, I think you want to just kind of stick by them, right? You don't want to be able to kind of undo them, or at least kind of sometimes it's better for you not to see how it would have gone, if that makes sense. And I guess you can only have one in your mini leagues anyway, and it would be a bit rubbish if someone kind of swapped out the team which was tanking down the bottom, propping everyone else up, and suddenly became a new mini league leader. I don't think that would quite work. So even if I did charge a fiver, I think I'd still just stick to one, actually, the more I think about it. Right, next question. How many stores have you visited today to find some hand wash, asked Jarvo? I'm on about six.
So, actually, fortunately, Jarvo, we ran out of soap in the house about 2 weeks ago, and I just happened to have some time on my hands one Saturday morning. So while I was in the shop, I actually picked up, because I'm eco-conscious, I picked up one of the refillable soap things for our soap dispenser in the house. So I've actually been well stocked up on hand wash, but I've visited an awful lot of stores to pick up other random bits of supplies over the last few days. And I think, you know, he said today, maybe over the last 3 days, it is probably over six for me. It could easily be eight or nine.
Yeah, I think I've there's like three ones in my local area. There's a Tesco, there's a Co-op, and there's Boots. And I've been to probably each of them twice just to pick up random stuff. You know, and you go to one, you're like, oh, go into, they've got this thing that there isn't there. And another one, oh, I've got some wipes here. Okay, I'll pick them up. Oh, look, there's some soap. Yeah, right, I'll grab that. But finding hand wash, if you mean hand sanitizer, is an absolute no-go here. It's rarer than a double-digit return in fantasy football. It's just not going to happen. It's a sort of an elderly relative. Like, my nan sent me a pack through the post. That is where you're getting to that sort of point in the moment where it's just gold dust. But it's actually better to wash your hands. Should be a last resort when you're out and about, but obviously that hasn't stopped everyone panic buying. Like, there's a Boots near where I work as well, which if you get that, you have to get there at like 7 o'clock, and they put a tiny amount out every day. But every time I've got there, they've been sold out already. So it just goes to show how crazy people are for it. But yeah, incredible that that's become such a commodity in these strange times, isn't it?
The early bird catches the hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
But Tom, would you have said, you're now obviously washing your hands for 20 seconds, I presume, every single time. Would you have said you were more of a 7 second and done kind of guy, or a 12 second man previously? What sort of hand washer were you?
I was a 12-second man, because I knew that obviously Santosh was important from my time on chemo. But 20 seconds and is definitely the staple now. In fact, it's incredible, like, seeing the dudes washing their hands. Like, it never used to happen, right? People used to have a pee and then walk out again. And now people are like queuing at my work, at least, to wash their hands.
It's phenomenal in public spaces, especially actually, to see men kind of actually stopping to wash their hands. Like, I definitely could attest to being more of like an 8 second kind of guy before this whole entire outbreak, but I'm steadfastly singing happy birthday in my head twice to try and get to that 20 seconds now to keep everyone safe.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense, especially if you're going to your nan or something. Don't be doing that. Right, next question. Oh, it's actually about football. Planet FPL, James, he who does the podcast, says, good on you for doing a podcast. No football till August. What do you do with football? Well, that's a very wide-ranging question. I assume he means what do we do from August onwards, if that's the case, or at least how we administer it going forward. I guess I would want to complete the season as it is. I don't see any reason why not, and then try to find a way to basically fit everything in. I mean, it has been mentioned by people like Jermaine Jenas, but removing some of the cups might be a good way of doing that. And Pep Guardiola has said that maybe the League Cup is probably a bit rubbish. And I know people are saying that one of the rejoinders is that it gives, you know, lower league clubs loads of money. We'll figure out a way in the formula that the Premier League clubs can make up that shortfall and maybe get rid of responsibilities like that, just to free up some space in the calendar. That might be what I want to do, but I think it's going to be quite harsh to not complete this season. I think that if something like this ever happens again, like, touch wood, it doesn't, but if it ever does, like, I think that we definitely need some sort of precedent set here, and however we kind of put this current pick allow, is going to definitely impact on the future of how football is administered in difficult times like these. I haven't got all the answers, but I'm just hoping they come up with a way to make sure this, whatever happened this season, is fairly done. But it's not just Liverpool, is it? It's like, as Stag mentioned earlier, it's West Brom, Leeds in the Championship. It's Coventry, League One. They're top by a long way. Don't have a stadium at the moment. They've been kind of pushed from pillar to post by their owners. Like, how do you deal with them? Like, oh, it's very, very tough. It's a very difficult thing to do. I just think that this season needs to be carried out before you move on to another one, to null it and void it and just throw it in the bin and think, okay, well, that doesn't matter. Let's move on to the next year. Seems like a bit of overly simplistic way of doing it for me.
Yeah, and even when you think about how, let's say, leveraged an awful lot of the clubs are, and contingent, and their whole entire business plans are almost contingent on success, you know, whether or not that's a good idea or not. Like, you think of Aston Villa, who were particularly financially pressed until they happened to kind of find themselves back up in the big time. Pretty remarkably, actually, the story of their promotion last season. And it's obviously fine now because they're a Premier League team, and even if they get relegated, parity payments, etc. But there's an awful lot to it. Without trying to sound sanctimonious or preachy, what I would hope is that maybe people start to appreciate the impact that football actually has in people's lives. I think already an awful lot of us have been shocked by the size of the vacuum when it came out of absolutely nowhere, and when the next the return of football is unknown. You know, at least when the season ended, usually there's some major championship coming, or some underage championship, or something on. Even the League of Ireland, let's say, would have been a summer championship and would have been on all through the summer if you just wanted to watch a football in Ireland, for example. Whereas it's just nothing. And I think maybe football governance people need to start to understand the importance of, like, getting people through gates, maybe the importance of making attendance at matches possible, and maybe question whether the Monday night kickoffs are a wise thing and the difficulties that go with commuting. I know train tickets are extortionately expensive in the UK, and maybe there should be a way to work out how match tickets and train tickets can kind of go together so that fans can travel more easily, so that stadiums are packed out. And that's extremely important for lower league clubs, especially where attendances matter. I think we've already seen with the way the Premier League were going headlong into trying to play this game week until quite late on, or the game week that should have just been played, that gate attendances and the revenue attached to those isn't that important at a Premier League level. But, like, there are four professional football leagues in England alone, and for an awful lot of those clubs, gate revenues are hugely important. And I think people need to start to understand that the fans are important, getting fans in the door is important for the fans, but also for the clubs. And this is a really big good chance for people to kind of hit the reset whilst perspectives are kind of changed.
Yeah, there's maybe a silver lining then, that some sort of valuation of the impact of fans on football as a spectacle is going to take place. I think it will be. I mean, watched the Man United game behind closed doors, and that was really eerie, very, very odd. I think there was an England game, wasn't there, a little while ago, that was behind closed doors as well, and that was like a really weird sort of otherworldly sort of experience. And I just it's not going to be quite be the same as it if there aren't fans there. And there's really interesting sort of questions on whether the home advantage is still a thing, and if there's no home fans there roaring you on, if you remove that sort of psychology, are players going to start acting a bit nicer if they can be heard? Yeah, I think hopefully, you know, there are some silver lines to this. And the next question actually does cover this too. So Rhino says, can we discuss the positives? So would forced isolation lead to an easy transition to a carbon neutral lifestyle? Always a good thing. And are experts important again? I don't think FPL experts are ever important, but maybe in this context, it might be a good thing just to voice over quickly that, yeah, it's probably, we're always looking as human beings for silver linings in things. We're always trying to be optimistic. We're always trying to find a way to spin things to have a positive light on them. And you know, those are a couple of examples of how things maybe could change for the better after a horrible time. Maybe people might reevaluate the way they live, and people may also reevaluate who they listen to. Certainly seen a few things on social media recently. For example, this morning, the Cristiano Ronaldo fake news story that was being retweeted. Yeah, obviously that was a great story, you know, that he was turning lots of his hotels into hospitals. Completely fake news. It was just, you know, marker had been done by someone pranking. Obviously harmless in that regard, but if you think about that example applied onto something a bit more nefarious, a bit more negative, like, you know, the spread of some sort of fake remedy for coronavirus, and you can see how those things can quickly become completely spun. So maybe experts are important again. Stag, what do you reckon?
I think I'm already, from a personal even point of view, I'm kind of trying to see the benefits and maybe how this coronavirus is going to, and the isolation that'll go with it, is maybe going to show people that working from home is something that is actually eminently more doable. I think, you know, people spend huge amounts of time every week commuting, and that's horrendous from a mental health point of view to be doing that day in, day out. I have never had to do it for any extremely long consistent period and over any great distances, and even still it's easy for me to appreciate that, but I think sometimes it can be harder for governments and politicians to understand that with maybe the sorts of jobs that they may have done or may have never done before going into office and enacting that sort of the legislation that defines lives. And that's, you know, that's on top of obviously the carbon neutral stuff, etc., etc. People are becoming an awful lot more aware of, let's say, just the germs that are transferred in train carriages that are in the tube or on airplanes, etc. And so I do hope that there is that silver lining from the point of view of experts. Look, I can only agree with you, Tom. Fake news is pervasive. It misleads people. I don't know how many times I've even been caught out about, you know, stories already of, you know, who has coronavirus or where it's affecting or the measures that are being brought in. It's people and governments at times have become better and better at making the stories just believable enough that they just switch your opinion, or they're just so, you know, easily digested that you don't actually even critically analyze them, even if you do have critical thinking faculties, and you just get caught out with them because you just don't think to think. And that's quite dangerous. And so experts are important, information is important, and truth is important.
Yeah,
this is extremely preachy for an FPL podcast. But yeah. You asked the question.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Let's move out of that and into something else. Rich FPL asks: is there a stat you guys regard as the mother of all stats? Like one metric you will choose and decide when choosing between player X and player Y. I know Nick really likes his shots in the box and likes his touches in the box. And for those his off-quoted ones. I think for me, it's XGI. I think that would be the one that I'd always sort of default to. XGI from open play, that is. So not if there's a penalty or something, I want that to always be removed, or a free kick or something, I want that always be removed. That's a bit of a crapshoot. And the other thing is FPL Salah in normal times does the betting odds, just the percentages of goals being scored or something like that. Those are actually quite useful tiebreakers. I know Josh from Wallsheeting also uses those, just because, I mean, those guys I don't really like them, but they make loads of money from predicting these sorts of things week to week. So if you're just thinking FPL is a case of being lucky, but being in a position to capitalize on luck, then looking at those and seeing what the likeliest, most probable scenario based on people who make money from this is what they're thinking is probably very useful for your FBL. So that's kind of my so XGIOP and kind of bookies odds, I guess. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, looking at Rich's question, he was kind of, I think he was probably hoping for us to come with one particular stat that was the mother of all stats. Unfortunately, maybe a bit like yourself, Tom, I can only give you the family of stats that would be important to me. From an attacking point of view, I like XG from open play. Interesting that you go for XGI. I always find the I aspect of it, which is trying to take in X assists, let's say XA, into account. I always find that that's a bit of a crapshoot. And so I tend to, from an assist potential point of view, I tend to nearly almost rely on the eye test for that, and maybe big chances created to assess that side of things. But XG is particularly important to me. And I actually really do like average positions to and heat maps to get an idea of just where a player is active and what they're doing. I think sometimes you can really digest a game quite well with heat maps and highlights. And also then from a defensive point of view, that's where I actually like bookies odds, because I feel like they're quite good at figuring out, at least they're very good at figuring out who's going to score, who might win. And those both teams to score odds are always quite important as well. And so you can kind of look into those and figure out who they fancy to pull a clean sheet out of the bag. But form is a pretty big thing for me on that as well. And that's why the eye test is so important.
No, I get you. I do like the average position stuff as well, actually, because as like, you know, the starting position nominal changes so much during a game, doesn't it? And also, you know, if you look at like Liverpool's front three or something like that, that's actually so fluid. Like where they line up at kickoff can often be so different to where they've actually spent physical time on the field. So, yeah, maybe the average starting position has definitely been one that I've reached for in the past to say to someone, actually, no, he's not a left winger, he's a striker. So, yeah, no, definitely behind that one as well. All right, final questions then. One from Benny Blanco. What four players, one goalkeeper, defender, midfielder and striker, would be in your all-time FPL dream team and why? I did have a little think about this before. A mixture of new and old. Goalkeeper would be David De Gea a couple of seasons ago under Mourinho. Dave saves absolutely ridiculous points that year. I think it was just a case of basically he basically was a premium player, even though he was a goalkeeper, which sounds a bit silly, but like he absolutely tore the league apart. And just having him in your team was just so huge, because one, you had Man United fans everywhere obviously delighting in it, 172 points, 18 clean sheets that year. The ownership was really high, and the clean sheet was just under half the games were a clean sheet. So you had a guarantee of pretty much points every week, which is absolutely fantastic. I think he was just so worth the money that year, even though he cost so much for a keeper. I think that was one of the first things that ever kind of wore me up to premium goalkeeper, when you've got that sort of guarantee of a clean sheet week after week, paired with the massive ownership. The other player I thought of there actually was Ben Foster / Boaz Myhill at West Brom. At the start of any season, they'd just be an awesome pairing, because that was in those days you'd have Foster at 4.5 and Myhill at 4.0. I remember one year Foster was out, Myhill was in. They played at Old Trafford and he kept a clean sheet and got 15 points. Something absolutely ridiculous like that. So yeah, absolute hero. Goalkeeper for you, Stag?
Goalkeeper for me, actually, so like yourself, De Gea came to mind for that particular Mourinho season as well. And also from that very same season, actually, Nick Pope as well, if you remember. That was a season I think that he won his position, like after, well, he didn't win it. He kind of got it by default when Tom Heaton got injured after, was it 8 or 9 game weeks or something like that? And then it just became like, you know, who was Pope? It kind of started with, and, you know, all the Pope puns kind of began. And then like he just became bona fide, like England goalkeeper. He probably should be ahead of Jordan Pickford at this point, but it was all that season that kind of brought him to the forefront of our minds. And sorry, I don't have the actual stat in front of me, but I remember by the end of that season, De Gea and Pope were kind of up there for the whole of Europe in terms of the number of goals they'd conceded compared to their XGC, and like the difference in favor of the fact that they've been making saves was like 14 or 12 goals, maybe, you know, with Pope, if you kind of considered how many games he had it over, like he was as good as De Gea that season. They were both fantastic. Maybe moving further up the field to a defender, I think it's Marcus Alonso. It's just Marcus Alonso. I just, you know, from an FPL perspective, Google more about his off-field maybe career and you might not want him. But from an FPL perspective, I remember when he first kind of broke into that Chelsea team under Conte, they'd had a particularly poor start to that season. And then, you know, there was the classic, they'll forever talk about it, when they moved to the three at the back with the kind of roaming midfielder or the roaming wing backs. And Alonso, having not actually been in the team, if I remember correctly, just suddenly became this must-own over the course of 3 game weeks. And it was phenomenal.
And the Bolton legend, Alonso, a very checkered sort of backstory, didn't he? So Bolton, Fiorentina, and then round up at Chelsea, and then became an absolute god in FPL terms. Absolutely milestone that year. I was thinking of this for a little while. I mean, obviously, I spoke about the West Brom goalkeepers earlier on. You've got your McCauley and you've got your Jevons, justice for Evans. Chris Brunt, when he became a defender, was very cool for a little while. That assist robbed from him in that infamous McCauley moment. But for defenders, bit of a legacy pick, maybe shows how long I've been playing, but Leighton Baines is very, very difficult to go beyond him or think beyond him as a player. I think he was the Alonso's daddy almost, I guess, in terms of what he was. Just so expensive back in the day, like so expensive. I think his price did actually exceed 8 million at one point.
But to think, like, this is a defender who was on penalties.
Exactly.
Like, it was ridiculous.
Like 170 points. He got over the 170 points mark on three occasions. You know, goals and assists, like an auto purchase, an auto buy, an auto own. The famous never bench, never captain Baines rule, which is a lot of legacy FPL players will remember. But yeah, he was an absolute kind of stick-on, a must-own in those teams. And back then, when there wasn't the proliferation of information that there is now, people just didn't put their money into that sort of player because he was so expensive, an expensive defender at the back. So I think he is a sort of player, he's like TAA, like in a few years' time, people were talking about TAA and being like, oh, remember him? Wasn't he great? When he invariably moves off to Real Madrid. But Leighton Baines is the one that always sticks in my mind as the archetype for the premium, amazing defender. Midfield then, Yaya Toure, I think, could probably be one that would come straight into mind for me. He was
what a time that season.
Incredible.
Dominated the league, wasn't he? Like, he was top in terms of assists. He was like nearly a 20 goal season, if I remember correctly. He had distance covered, tackles. He just did everything.
He did. It was so good. He was so good that year. 2013-2014, 20 goals and 9 assists in the Premier League for Man City. Dear me, that's he was just so good. Like, he was just like, you could just catch them every week, and it's the sort of player that you just can't see past because they're just so good that way. I think, again, must own in any team, and like the amount of times where I think that was the year when vice captain had just come in, and I remember I think the amount of times that I had him as my vice captain, he came through for me was time out of number. Actually, I think I got about 3 or 4 very lucky vices off him. I think it was that year that vice captains did start to come in. Yeah, what a player he was. And the other one is Alexis Sanchez, midfielder, your classic out of position player. That season he was number 9 for Arsenal, absolutely incredible. And we spoke about a couple last week with Ben, the double game week experience of having him as your captain, because he was just guaranteed to do something for you at one point. He just went for a blistering period where he was either going to score a goal, at least going to score a goal. It was on penalties as well. You know, the amount of goal and assist sort of combos he got was out as well.
So I was I inevitably fell on Alexis straight away as the first player that came to mind, and I think why maybe Alexis sticks in my mind the most is because I continue to not pick him when I should have picked him, and and so I suffered at his hands a lot, which maybe sears it into my memory that little bit more. Maybe thinking a little bit more kind of away from the obvious premium picks, the year that Josh King scored 16 goals in a season for Bournemouth from midfield as a cheap pick, I had him in my team for his hat-trick against West Ham. And I think, Tom, I actually met you that day for the first time, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And it was a real triumph. I tipped him in my column. I brought him in. I'm classically don't listen to my own advice and usually suffer as a consequence, but this time I brought him in. I had him for the hat trick, and it was absolutely bloody brilliant. I'd missed him the week before when he got like a single goal, and this was the start of his run, and then suddenly he just took off, and that was great. Later reclassed as a forward, and that was unfortunate. And then another one that came to mind is Clint Dempsey when he was at Fulham.
Yeah.
Way back, him and Danny Murphy were both like really good, solid, cheap, affordable picks, and I just loved having both of them on my team. I remember Joe Allen as well at Swansea for 1 year was particularly good under Brendan Rodgers. Good picks.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think a lot of people would be screaming Michu at this point, wouldn't they, as well?
Yeah.
Well, the ultimate one-hit wonder there. One incredible season. I think he started off with a brace, didn't he, against QPR and didn't look back.
You know, he's a hero to young Haaland, who's coming through.
He is,
through.
Yeah.
He's
like
one of my favourite things.
Yeah. I thought it was very cute indeed. Right, and then finally the forwards then. That's not entirely true. There is a little bit of a conflict. I mean, I did think Drogba first, but Van Persie, I think, you could just that one season for Arsenal where he scored in every game, like, captain, you've captained him all season, at least I did, just captained him the whole year, because at least I knew he was going to get me 12 points every game, at least. Obviously I'm Dutch-born, so Van Persie was definitely something that appealed to me. Unfortunately, I was a bit too young to see Bergkamp and Overmars and co. in FPL. I didn't know where FPL was going back then, but RVP definitely, I remember, even when he went to United, I still had him in my team.
I was about to question to see if you'd held it against him when he went to United, and at least he won the league at United, which was nice for old Robin. Yeah. A forward that comes to mind for me has to be Luis Suarez. There's multiple seasons in the Premier League where he just destroyed everybody, in particular Norwich, and it was so much fun owning him. I think, like, there are plenty of strikers who've scored on the level that he scored in that particular, in his two particularly big seasons for Liverpool. But what kind of changes everything about Suarez for me is that when Aguero scores, it's always inevitably, like, it's not scrappy. He's had plenty of great curled finishes or whatever. But Suarez's goals were just so varied, so amazing. Remember the header from like 20 yards that he put in, 40-yard screamers, like kind of acrobatic kicks, you know, the really scrappy goals too, the little bit of shithousery. You just kind of had to love what he brought to the party. And so, like, he was like a fun captain pick as well. He had like the flair of a Saint-Maximin at times, but was still just absolutely brilliant.
Oh yeah, I think just against Norwich, you were just guaranteed a hat trick, weren't you? That's what's really cool. We love predictability in FPL. The shithousery point also makes me think of Diego Costa, actually, for different reasons, because he wasn't get you a yellow card. Do you remember that amazing period when he had four yellow cards?
It was one of my first viral tweets, Tom, was like this. There was something along the lines of like, oh, this Diego Costa 4 year card crap is killing me. And it, like, at the time, like, for FPL, it was like a particularly popular tweet, like, for my account anyway. I was like, oh, I've really made it on Twitter here. But
that was a great period in time, because everyone was like, I had him and he kept scoring me goals, and everyone was just like, I'm not buying him. It was on Fantasy Football Scout at the time, but all the FSs were like, oh no, I'm not buying him, no, he's got four yellows, like, he's just an indisciplined rump, like, there's no way in hell he's ever gonna, you know, not get a yellow card. And that kept going until I think like 12 games later or something absolutely ridiculous, isn't it? It's like 80 points or something people missed out on. So yeah,
and his form completely dropped off, by the way. I think he ended up making it to like the period where you get clemency for your previous indiscretions, let's say. Yeah. And then people brought him in again for like some good fixtures, and inevitably it just didn't go right with him, which is just classic Diego Costa.
I think that's basically it for this week. Quite a lot of questions there. Hopefully some insight into how bored out of our minds we are that we've started speaking about that instead of FPL. I really wish we were able to talk about FPL, but unfortunately at this point we're not. But no themes to the pod this week. The pod with Ben was obviously the Killers, but that seems like it was a world away right now. We are Who Got The Assist. You can find us on Twitter at @WGTA_FPL. You can find Nick at @WGTA_Nick. You can find Stag at @FPLStag. We're also on Instagram too, as WGTA.FPL. At the moment, I'm just posting pictures of myself looking sad, but when the season does kick off again, you'll be able to see lots of football-related content from there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and look, everybody, over the next few weeks, I think we're probably going to continue recording a few pods, maybe.
Yeah, I don't see why not.
I hope you guys enjoyed this one, and please let us know if there's any more questions you'd like us to answer, because sure enough, I don't think we're going to have any football content to replace them with anytime soon. And just keep safe, keep adhering to advice, and just be well.
Yeah, I absolutely second that. Well, I hope this assists you in some ways, feel a little bit better about your time in isolation if you are. But yeah, no matter what, we'll be back very, very soon. Take care.
All the best.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Social Podcast Network.